to pass over now to Jim Longhurst and Chris Wilmore, who I think we know, but let's do this. So Jim is Professor of Environmental Science and Assistant VC here. He's the Chair of University Sustainability Board and co-authored UE Sustainability Plan. Chris is a Senior Academic Fellow at Bristol University and has a long record of leading educational change, most recently as University Academic Director of Undergraduate Studies at Bristol. She is currently co-leading a Hefke Strategic Catalyst Fund project engaging students in sustainability change in the community and curriculum jointly with UE. There's a hint. I'm delighted to hand over to Chris and Joe. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Ian. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the University of the West of England. Just add my personal welcome to Helen's. It's great to see so many of you here. What we are looking forward to is those conversations. We want to learn from your experiences, and we will gladly share ours. And one of the great experiences we have to share with you is the European Green Capital Experiences. And as Ian has said in that introduction, Chris and I have had the great pleasure of being heavily involved in Bristol's year as European Green Capital, and from the university's point of view, actually running a project that enabled our students to make a difference in the city. So without further ado, let me just very briefly invite the panelists to introduce themselves. I'm going to ask them to be brief because we want to ask questions of them. There'll be plenty of time to fill in the background. But I will start at this end.
I'm Dr. Georgina Goff. I'm Senior Lecturer in Education for Sustainable Development at UE, and in 2015 I was one of two UE Green Capital Coordinators.
My name is Andrew Garrett. I was the chair of European Green Capital in Bristol in 2015. By training, I spent 35 years in the renewable energy.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Gary Topp. I'm here today in my role as director of the Bristol Green Capital Partnership, which I stopped doing a couple of months ago, actually, so it's nice to put that hat back on. I'm currently director of Culture Central, a citywide cultural agency in Birmingham. And I guess my specialism is really around the way that cities have to think differently about their futures.
Hello, I'm Jan Hayward, and I'm the elected Vice President for Societies and Communication at the Students' Union at UE. So I am the full-time officer that's been championing sustainability at the Students' Union, and I support our part-time officers. And I came in about beginning of July last year, so I came in kind of halfway through the year. But I've been a big part of kind of the continuation of Bristol 2015, obviously it doesn't stop here.
Good morning, I'm Alan Bailey. I chair Low Carbon Southwest. We are the largest environmental business network in the UK, with about 4,000 companies involved in our network from the Shetland Islands right the way down to the Channel Islands. Our involvement through Low Carbon Southwest was predominantly through a product called Go Green, which is a demand-side product helping companies become more sustainable. Within the Bristol region, we have 2,000 companies engaged in that programme, and it's something that we delivered during 2015 and we're continuing to deliver.
Well, thank you very much indeed, colleagues. What I hope you've had the chance to do is to see the guide, which we put a number of resources as background information for you. If you haven't had a chance to read them now, you will have that chance throughout the conference. But information that will help you understand the scale, complexity and impact of the Green Capital Year. There's a short video, there's some the citywide review document, a link to the knowledge transfer experience of the Green Capital Year called the Bristol Method, and a very specific contribution that the universities have co-authored, which explains our Green Capital Student Capital project. That's a background information set for you that will help you understand a little more of the city transformation process the universities have been involved in. Chris?
It's really easy for all of us to focus in on getting our institutions sorted out. Goodness knows there's enough for all of us to do in that task alone to keep us going for a lifetime. But the theme of this conference and the theme of this opening session is to think about the role our institutions can play in building healthier, more sustainable cities. The responsibility we have outside of the front door. Now, very often institutions talk about their role in their city region as being about being one of the biggest employers. And therefore the responsibility of running our business as efficiently and as sustainably as we can. And that's fine. Yes, that's one of the impacts. But there are other impacts that our institutions have. Our research impacts. We have this amazing living laboratory outside our front door called our city region. How are we engaging in that? How are we getting our students to engage in that as a research lab? What are we doing to help our city regions by doing our research? And thirdly, our students. In this city, just these two universities, UWE and Bristol University, our students form over 12% of the population of the city. And just ask yourself, do you know what the HE population of the city in which you work is? It's going to be a significant percentage. And cities tend to problematize. Students are a problem. They push rents up. They dominate the nighttime economy. They are just a pain in the neck. Actually, they're not. And part of what this project is about has been about convincing people of what students can do. So think about what your students could do to change the city in which they're studying and the impact that will have on the students. And fourthly, think about your graduates. I don't know about the city in which you work or the place in which you work, but for us in Bristol, a high percentage of our graduates stay here. It's the sort of city you come to and you stay in. So if we can get the right message to our students and get them engaged in the city, we are helping to create an engaged, sustainable city. And the final thing I want to just raise as an initial thought for you before we start to ask the panel questions is whether you think this is something your institution should do alone or whether it's something all of the HEIs in your city could do. I don't know what your inter-university relationships are, but UWE and Bristol have their moments, let's put it like that.
They're positive moments, as well as some that we managed to skirt around.
But this has been a completely joint project, in which hopefully the partners on the table will say, well, actually, at times we weren't clear who was doing, you know, which institution was doing what. And together we can have an impact on our cities that we couldn't have if we worked on our own. Jim.
Thank you very much indeed, Chris. So how we're going to run this, ladies and gentlemen, is that we will ask some initial questions of the panel, and then we'll invite you, very respectfully, to make some contributions. So Chris and I will run up and down the aisles and pass the mic around, and then we'll draw it together, and Ian will tell us when we're running out of time, but you'll be enjoying it so much that we just want to carry on. Sorry, Ian. So, as a little warm-up question, and I should mention that Chris and I both consulted security services to work out what were the right techniques to extract information from reluctant participants. We have some really good things that we could bring to bear. Of course, knowing you all, that won't be necessary, but that was just a little warning. So, the opening and very gentle question that we'd like you to think about is, what was it that made Bristol the winning city to receive the accolade, the only UK city to have this accolade? And what, from your perspectives, was the role that the universities played? Now, I'm looking at Andrew first, but then I'll invite others to make contributions as well. Don't forget to press the little button to put the red light on.
Well, thanks, Jim. Well, first I should say that I had nothing to do with that. I can take no credit for it. I can see one person in the front here who has a huge role. There were various parts. So first of all, it was third time lucky. And so first was under a Labour administration, second under a Liberal Democrat administration, third attempt, successful attempt, was under a recently arrived independent administration. And I think it came for various different reasons. One, because we'd already done quite a lot. There was a lot of green activity, green entrepreneurship, green expertise, green interest in Bristol and the surrounding area. So we had some credibility. But secondly, we recognised we had a lot more to do. So we had a good foundation on which to build, but we weren't by any means complacent. We were following on, in the end, from Copenhagen, which of course is probably the greenest capital. So when I went to Copenhagen to talk to them about before I took on the job, rather, I said, do you realise that you're a big green capital to various people in the street? And they said, well yeah. And what they meant was, yes, of course, we are the greenest capital in Europe. Not that they were so much aware of the accolade of the green capital. So, it was what we'd already done, and the credibility that which that brought with us, and that included both universities, but also industry and professional services, and also the general ethos of the city, but also a recognition that we have a lot to do, and everybody knows about traffic, for example, but there's more to it than that.
Georgie, would you like to say something about the university role, and then I'll come to Jem from the student perspective?
From the perspective of UWE and our contribution to winning the award, as pointed out Andrew, we have got a colleague, Professor Martin Big, who has been working for the last 5 years on a European-funded environmental INET environment technology project, and he, as part of the UWE community, was instrumental in making the case for Bristol across the unsuccessful and successful bids. But I think one of the strengths of the Bristol application was the partnership that was put into the bid. So this wasn't a city council application, this was an application from the city, from the businesses within the city, from the universities and other educational institutions, and from the city council. So the university, through its research and a previous engagement in the city over a more than 20-year period, helped to contribute to the creation of that really strong case about pointing out the sustainability credentials of Bristol previously, but also in creating those credentials through research and the behaviour of staff and students. So it was part of the background, and also very active in the actual application process, and then became very active partners in the implementation of the year as well.
So the point of view from students' perspective, we've had a massive transformation of a few years, so I think it's really important for us to kind of get involved and really fundamental part of the bid. I think for us at the Student Union, it's just given us an excuse to kind of put more time and resource and support behind our students' projects and initiatives, so it's kind of given us that momentum, and we know it's really, really, really important to kind of, we found a massive shift in the last few years with students kind of proactively coming to us, so it's been really great to kind of have that excuse to kind of give them more time and energy behind it and really drive forward their projects.
I was actually involved in the first bid. I went to Brussels in 2009 for the 2010 award, and I was involved with writing the business engagement side for the second application, and had nothing to do with the third one, so that maybe something to reflect on.
I agree with that.
But from my point of view, I think Andrew's absolutely right. There is persistence. I think we have continued to have the goal as a city region that we wanted to be a European Green Capital. But then there's the level of detail in those serves involved with the first two bits, but the level of information that went into those compared to other city regions around Europe as well was phenomenal, from the business community, from the universities, from the local authority, was superb. Not all of the data put us in a very good picture, really. Some of the data was quite poor in terms of how we were performing, but the fact that we were actually monitoring things and we had the data was put us ahead of a lot of the other city regions. And then finally, I'll just say that from a UWE perspective, the university, UWE have been very, very engaged from day one, and actually the whole European Green Capital bids and then programme wouldn't have been achievable without the involvement of an organisation like you and the University of Bristol as well. So the university engagement has been superb.
Now, one of the things that Bristol was identified as being very different from other cities was the Green Capital Partnership. Now, Gary, you were very centrally involved in all of the partnership activities. How did that partnership help Bristol win, and what role, again, did the two universities play in that partnership?
I think my colleagues must have been very polite in not mentioning the Bristol Green Capital Partnership, which was undoubtedly one of the main reasons that the city won the award. I have to say that it's a little known fact, this, but I did actually have some involvement in helping to write the technical scorecards on a voluntary basis for the winning bee. But I think that I tell that story not because it's about me, but because it tells you about the way that actually many, many people in this city, in many different capacities, voluntary, paid or otherwise, did come together under the banner of the Bristol Green Capital Partnership for several years before the city won the award. So you'll know this little story that the Green Capital Partnership established itself in 2007, kind of thought about what it should call itself, recognised that in the cultural sector there was a thing called the European City of Culture Award, and called itself therefore the Green Capital Partnership. There was no such thing as the European Green Capital at that point. Luckily, the EU invented it a year or so later, and that led to the three and final successful bid for the city last year. But one of the many things that the Green Capital Partnership is, it gives a name to the volume and appetite of the city for working in this area. Yeah. So it was a way of saying lots of communities, lots of people, and lots of anchor institutions, very importantly the two universities, were playing a very significant role in beginning to think about, provide some leadership to do some technical work in what the future of this city might be. So there's no question that the partnership, the universities as major players in that, was a significant reason that the city was given the award last year.
I'd just like to add a little bit of context to that, because as Gary has said, the Green Capital Partnership was probably the key agent for winning the award. And we recognised throughout the year that we were here. I was chair of a company which was there for a year, and they were going to continue thereafter along with the City Council. So we don't like this word legacy. The legacy organisation for our year is partly Bristol City Council and partly Green Capital Partnership, and it has been transformed. It's changed during the year, and is in a more robust position as it was. So it's been key not only to winning but also to continuing the work after the end of the year.
To clarify, the Green Capital Partnership is an organisation of 850 groups, organisations and businesses in Bristol, all of whom have committed to sustainability. It gives us as universities unrivalled access at the press of a button to 850 organisations, voluntary sector, business sector, you name it, and the key contact for sustainability in those organisations. So for both institutions, it's been an unrivaled, just an amazing resource. So there's somebody in the room who wanted an opportunity for students to do some business plans for NGOs. Green Capital Partnership, press the button. Anybody in the partnership want a new business plan? 44 NGOs pinged back saying, me please. And suddenly our students were writing real business plans for real organisations. So having that sort of partnership in our city has been at the core of what we're able to achieve. And it's not, I think, unique. It could be developed anywhere else. But I want to go and ask Gary a question. One of the things with Green Capital was that the store was set out as, this has got to be fun. And that attracted a lot of criticism. So Gary, can you justify the tag, this isn't serious sustainability, this is going to be fun?
Yeah, it's very interesting, isn't it? I think we did two things in the green sector. We love a technological solution, and I was interested to see that pinged up straight away in the early question. And we love to tell a little bit of a complex, difficult, hair-shirt story about the challenge, don't we? I think that one of the things, again, that we can sometimes forget in this wonderful world of city development is that cities are the great human expression right now. That 70% of the world within cities is a wonderful thing to think about. And we are creatures of joy and soul and song. And I do think that as we sometimes think about future cities, we forget that changing stuff can better be achieved if we're having fun making relationships in a very personal and human way. So we might, in a posh way, call that stakeholder engagement or leadership, but actually we're just talking about human relations. Yeah? We're talking about how best to make them work. You all know that the power of that at institutional level. Yeah, so you'll know that the old command and control doesn't work, the old technical solution is never enough, and I think that applies equally at city scale. And again, what a vehicle like the partnership allows you to do is bring people together, have city conversations, laugh and joke and cry, and actually think hard about the future of the city in a very human way, and that involves a lot of joy and pleasure as well as a lot of technical thinking.
So, all universities seem to work with their business colleagues in their city regions. Now, Alan's already mentioned a variety of those partnerships. I just wonder, Alan, if you'd like to expand a little bit on the way the Green Capital Partnership and the business community have interacted and how that might continue into the future.
Yes, I'm not sure I'm the right person to comment on Green Capital Partnership in that respect, although I was one of the sort of original people involved with Green Capital Partnership. But from a business perspective, the engagement is superb. I mean, one of the things, one of the reasons why I think Bristol has managed to achieve European Green Capital status is because we do have a wealth of expertise in this part of the world. And so we have membership across Lucombe South West, across the UK. And yet we have around 1,500 companies who are located in the west of England, so across the four local authority areas here. And most of those organisations, like Andrew's company and many others, are world-leading at what they do and are at the cutting edge of their sectors or subsectors and are not only proud to be located here, but actually that's part of the story. They're here because there is access to skills, there is access to great universities, there is access to wonderful city life here, plus you've got the rural hinterland of the Bristol and Bath areas. So when you put all of that together as a mix, this is actually a very compelling case for businesses to be located here. And in our sector, we thankfully have built up a very, very significant cluster which allows us then to support programmes that both the Green Capital Partnership are doing and also my own organisation as well.
We've got a room full of HEIs from all over the country. What's the panel's advice on what role HEIs can play in building healthier, happier cities? You've got some clues from what the audience think up behind you. What do you think is the role of HEIs? What can we all go away and do?
I think from our experience from last year, what one of the fantastic outcomes for both universities was from last year was that we had the opportunity to showcase exactly how much universities can do in contributing towards healthier, happier cities. So I think some of the obvious things around research into sustainable city technologies and behaviours and so on was probably already well known. But the case for capitalising on what students can offer, coming back to what you said earlier, Chris, was one of the best outcomes for us last year, reminding the city and organisations within it that we do have between us 50,000 students who are very capable, particularly final year and postgraduate students. They are work ready at that point. So finding ways to showcase that skill set and to create opportunities for students to liaise via the partnership with organisations in the city across the voluntary and commercial sectors was for us one of the best outcomes last year. So the research, the knowledge, and then of course the behaviour as well, as Chris mentioned, collectively we make up a very significant proportion of the population of the city of Bristol. So if we can do things to positively change the behaviours of our staff and students, then we will make Bristol a happier, healthier place. So I think on a range of levels there are all sorts of things universities can do.
I was very interested to see it, not just the obvious things. So we had a high level of intellectual input to the year from both universities, and you might well expect that. That's what you're here for. But I also saw a very strong sense of emotional or ideological engagement by the student body, I think inspired also by the staff, but also interestingly, perhaps the unsung heroes of this are the support staff, the people who are managing large numbers of buildings, consuming large amounts of electricity and heat, and they also engaged wholeheartedly in the year. So there were these three sectors, the academic staff, the students and the support staff, all of whom appeared, at least from where I was sitting, to be engaged. What I also thought, and we'll see whether this is, turns out to be the case, was there was a sea change in both university student bodies about the issues of environment. I got the feeling that this was not something which was just going to be a flash in the pan for the year, but it was actually going to continue. And I think if we achieve that, or at least we help to achieve that, then that's hugely important. And of course, could be duplicated or replicated in any other higher education institute.
So from my point of view, I would say definitely use your student unions as sort of the advice that we would give. So we could quite easily have quite a lot of contacts. That's the sort of things you could tap into. And what I will say is that obviously student unions can really excel in different kind of ways of engagement. And I think what was just said about kind of engaging in a fun, kind of unique way is really important. And this year we've kind of used things like food and music and festivals to engage students that previously wouldn't have been engaged, and it's kind of tapping into kind of different areas. So I would say, yes, you work with student unions, and I think the partnership between the university is really important, but what we've shown is the partnership with the student unions have been really, really vital as well, and I think that's the partnership working has kind of been the key there.
Karen?
I think we live in an extraordinary moment for universities in cities, actually. Having worked across a number of cities, universities wear their heart on their sleeve really easily in terms of whether or not they are or are not engaged with the future of their city. Given that we've got a room full of them, you will know really whether or not your university is using all of its anchor institutional opportunity and weight to make an effect on the future of your city. And whether it's not, it's in the DNA of your university to do that. Why we're at that point, I think, is really interesting. This thing that sometimes we call austerity or public sector reform, I think has meant that universities have a much more important role in the future cities than they have had over the last few decades. So when you then apply the weight, power, and we've heard about the student numbers, research opportunity, the economy of the universities, you then start to think, actually, okay, there's a responsibility on the sector now to carry some of that opportunity because other institutions cannot any longer do it. You might think about the changing role of local government in that. I tend to see that not as a deficit model, but as an opportunity, because actually the people, the expertise, the economic generator of the universities is a huge opportunity for any city to move positively into this agenda. And I have to say that there's no question that both UWE and University of Bristol played a very, very full and continue to part in the future of this city. I only see that becoming more and more of a responsibility. And you know, I've said before that I think actually UWE's track record on the way that they are changing their campus is a model for any city, let alone any university. It's an extraordinary step change journey, and one that I think we all have to celebrate and reflect on in our own institutions.
It's quite fascinating actually. When we first started taking interns on board and involved with our organisation, the interns that were coming through the universities had very good, what I would say, technical skills, and they've obviously been very good students. But actually, the application of that knowledge was maybe missing 5-6 years ago. What we're seeing now is the students coming out of the universities, and I think that the groundswell, the transition movement that we've seen, the ability is sort of for the universities to be agents for change, that's reflected in the students that are coming through as well now. We're actually getting students who are coming through that don't just have those technical skills, but really understand how to apply that knowledge, and are exactly what we're looking for, that kind of ready, willing, and able workforce that we need within our organisations.
One of the things the universities did, to pick pick on Alan's point. It was about developing change agent skills in students. And between us, our students put in 100,000 hours of volunteering on sustainability in the city last year. And you think that sounds a lot. But actually, if you totted up what the institutions in your city are doing, you'd find it was tens of thousands of hours of engagement in sustainability in the city, but bringing it to the surface and making it an explicit part of the institutional agenda has transformed the numbers and the kind of engagement of our students.
So we've had the opportunity to ask some questions of the panel. It's now an opportunity for you to put your questions to the panel. Chris and I will run up and down the aisles with the microphones. So I invite you to signal with your hand who would like to ask a question. I know that Martin would always ask a question, but I'm going to ignore you and let us have a visitor. We will make sure we ask your question, Martin.
Hello. Thank you, everyone, for this panel this morning. My question is in regards to what is on the slide behind you in terms of the two C and D that came up first, in terms of community engagement and leadership. And what would you say are best practice in terms of the roles of university to really capitalize on C and D?
Perhaps we might take a response from the universities and then look to the outside to make a comment. So Georgie or Jen, would you like to start?
Thank you. Yes, I think one of the things that's already been alluded to but perhaps worth just emphasising in terms of the role of universities collectively and making a change in the city is that I think a key to the success of achieving the huge number of voluntary hours that Chris referred to was the working relationship between UWE and Bristol last year, and that was partly facilitated by a hefty funded project called Green Capital Student Capital, which was very much around volunteering and promoting opportunities for students to engage in the Green Capital Year. Both universities set their own agendas, but this particular project was very much about engaging with organisations and facilitating students in sharing their skills with those organisations. And from perhaps Andrew or Gary or Alan might comment on this, but some of the feedback we received early on was that the relationship between organisations and universities is quite often based on personal relationships between individuals in those organisations and individuals in the universities. And so on one level, just trying to capture the data around the level of engagement between the university and the city enable us to have a baseline at the start of the year proved very difficult. The other piece of feedback we received was that organisations that are not currently engaged with universities sometimes don't know how to start that relationship. Who do they contact? How do they find out? They know they need some help, but they don't know whether what they've got to offer is a volunteering opportunity, an internship opportunity, a master's research project or whatever. So one of the things we've set up as part of this project is an online portal called SkillsBridge, which is a single place for any organisation to go and simply say, here's some help, I need some help with this particular task. Then behind the scenes, that goes into both universities, is converted and this personal contact made with the relevant organisation to facilitate a conversation and shape that opportunity, that sort of request for help into an opportunity for students, and then put that opportunity out for students to pick up on. So simply creating a united front and a simple way for organisations to engage with universities, I think, is one of the key parts of that question. Perhaps not answering to your question directly, but from a leadership point of view, you need that institutional buy-in by leaders within an individual institution, but within all institutions in the city, and then looking at the existing mechanisms for facilitating community engagement and outreach and capitalising on those and enhancing them further.
There's a lot of research that says however much we as an institution think we are really engaged in our cities, when you look the other side of the fence, they see us as remote, elite, bastions of power, authority and privilege. And it's really easy for us to get involved in a way that reinforces those messages. You know, we go in because we know it all, don't we? And actually one of the key messages has been a about humility, about going in as partners and saying, look, you have a shed load of expertise that we'd like to draw upon, and we have some stuff we could offer too. And it's about building that partnership of equals where we're mutually learning from each other rather than going in, and it's a different kind of leadership. It's a kind of sitting alongside leadership rather than a, you know, we're going to make this happen leadership.
Gary, it'd be interesting to see whether we are displaying humility when we engage with the partnership and its 850 members. What does it look like from the from outside the ivory towers? Not that we have any of those.
we have shed loads.
There's that lovely T.S. Eliot line, humility is endless. And so thank you for introducing that word. So I think it is really important. One of the leadership is a changing space, isn't it? And city leadership now does require is a collective thing. Very interesting saying this at the moment when, of course, Bristol's just changed its mayor, and whereby we still might have a vision of the future cities that relies too much on individual leadership, in my view. So that's not a pro or anti-mayor thing. It's simply a saying, actually, I think we still too often like the Alex Ferguson approach in leadership. Yeah, big dominant figure will drive it, etc., etc. Cities aren't going to work like that anymore. It's going to be a dispersed leadership model. And that leadership has to happen at street level, at community level, and across the anchor institutions in a much more collaborative way. I think cities are still learning how to do that. I think that actually Bristol does it pretty well, and the universities play a very strong and humble role in that. But to pick up on your comment, yes, actually, you know, sometimes having an academic expert, yeah, is the least helpful way of engendering a collegiate approach to leadership, yeah, because sometimes it overvalues technical expertise as opposed to interpersonal expertise, and we know that you've got to get that blend right. So there's a lot of really, but I think, just to say it really briefly, actually I think that last year was a huge journey for the two universities. The year gave a reason for them to think hard about this, act differently around it, and I saw all of those characteristics begin to be challenged and changed in a very positive way, and I do think we've ended up 18 months on in a better place with both the universities, and that's a huge positive outcome from the year.
Okay, so
question over there, Jim.
Okay.
Your turn for exercise.
You would like asking Mike. What's the contribution of the further education sector, please?
Okay, the contribution of the further education sector. Who would like to start the response? Andrew, you were in oversight of so much of the Green Capital Year.
Yeah, I would say it was less than it should have been. We concentrated very much on the primary school children. We will come to that later on, which I believe was actually very successful for all sorts of reasons we haven't discussed. We're talking already about the universities. We engaged with the youth of Bristol early on in the year. We had it was called a Green Youth Day. It changed its name several times. Where that did involve, potentially involved every educational establishment up to the age of, I think, 18 or so. That was really the only formal engagement that we had with anything outside higher education and primary school. Now, we chose quite carefully the primary schools because the feeling was if we could get the primary school children on board, influence them and engage them, they would engage a large chunk of society through their parents and other members of their family. And that would be a long-lasting process. I've just written a report, at the moment a report for me, but one of the things which I reflect on in there is that we didn't do enough in further education generally. We did engage, just this is a slight tangent, but this is quite an interesting thing. It's a small thing, but quite important. We engaged with the Airbus and I deliberately involved Airbus because I wanted to have a discussion about whether Airbus should be part of a European green capital event. And I wanted to have that argument that it must be, all parts of the society must be. In there, we had a lot of apprentices working on the development of electric aeroplanes, so the beginnings of a low carbon or zero carbon aviation industry. So there were apprentices and trainee engineers involved in that. But I would say we didn't do a very good job, to be frank, on that part of the education sector.
As someone not involved with the programme for last year overall, I'm sort of seeing it from, I think, possibly externalised in this, with regards to further education. The one thing I would say is that the universities do engage with the colleges, and all of the initiatives that we were involved with and all the programmes that we were involved with and everything we attended, I know the colleges were asked to participate through their other partnerships, through the universities and through some of the private organisations and companies involved as well. So there was some engagement, but other than that, I'm not sure of a wider sort of direct programme. So.
I think it is the case that universities do have more freedom of action in these areas. We have a question here.
Thank you. Good morning. Ted Gorman, I'm Director for Social Responsibility and Sustainability at Edinburgh University. One of the directly relevant to green capital, but our experience, we're thinking about how we engage with the city, and we do a lot anyway, and if I was trying to make a PR case, I would do what someone was saying, and just toss up all the number of hours that we do doing stuff. The real challenge for us is, Edinburgh's quite a wealthy city, but it's not a normal distribution. We have two distributions of income. One is very high, one is quite low. And I guess the challenge for us, is around how we engage with people who aren't upper or middle class white people, and how we extend the opportunity we actually might have to the rest of those people in the city. So my question is always around kind of inclusion and poverty and those kind of issues, and particularly to any from the panel, but particularly the universities, how much the theme that might be for yourself. And I don't mean in a kind of rather technical, statistical way, the participation way that we sometimes do it. I mean in a proper kind of way. So I'm just interested because that's very much something as we develop our city viewing thinking. That's something that's very much on our mind.
One of the really heartening things from the student work has been we've been collecting feedback from both students and people they've worked with. And a number of community groups have said to us things like, this has changed our attitude to the universities. We've never had any engagement with universities. Students are a staggering resource for getting out into places where the institution can't get. Students come with a kind of humility, but actually, you know, the rest of us don't quite deliver. We come with institutional baggage. Students don't. So we've had fantastic feedback from people working in a diverse range of community groups right across the city, in poorer communities, in diverse ethnic communities and so on. So it has had an impact. Take your point entirely about the hours could be a PR thing. But actually, what it did by surfacing it, I'm not a PR-y sort of person, but it transformed attitudes. It made particularly senior management understand just what our students were doing in the city. And that led to a sort of spiral of growth and more engagement. So don't just write off the numbers thing as a PR thing. It actually changes what happens and how many people do stuff, real stuff, on the ground.
Chris, it is probably worth pointing out that the distribution in Bristol is not that different to Edinburgh. And one of the things I think the students' unions do particularly well is the various outreach activities. And Jem, I wonder if you might comment on some of the brilliant society activities. And I know we've just had the awards and I heard some of the brilliant things that you do, but this audience won't know about those.
So at the Students' Union, we have they classified kind of society, but we have a green team. And this year we've been able to secure more resource with our green team leader. So we actually have a support staff that is in place to kind of facilitate, support and empower our students. And I think what I mentioned earlier is that we put on a massively diverse range of events, and a lot of it completely student-led. And we've got, with our kind of increased resource, we've got that kind of that feedback channel to get kind of the views of our students and what sort of things that they want us to put on and how we can increase engagement. And we put, like I said earlier, we've done a food festival recently that's kind of attracting to different types of students to the normal kind of projects that we've run. So I think with the increased support and resource that we've had this year based around the Green Capital, that's how we've been able to secure that funding. We've been able to kind of reach out to students, find out the sort of things that they want to put on, and then kind of put on different kind of diverse events to attract different types of students. So I hope that helps.
I think our time is nearly up, and I'm going to pass to Chris to summarise and tell us about the future.
It forced me, first of all, to thank the five of you for coming and contributing, so that you got a view other than the institution's views about what has happened. In terms of the legacy, both institutions have committed to carrying on the work in the same way. At Bristol, it's fully funded this year in the same way as it was last year. So it's not just a one-year project, it's becoming part of institutional commitments. But I want to wrap up by suggesting to you that the single most important impact your institution has on the sustainability of the planet are the students who leave you. And in this room, probably we're responsible for over 1 million people a year going out into the world. They are young and they have a lifetime of carbon footprint ahead of them. And that is the single biggest impact that we have. And the question for us is, what do we do in our roles that equip them to live more sustainable lives? Our estates colleagues here, through the subliminal curriculum, are absolutely crucial. If students come to expect to live on a sustainable campus or precinct, then they're going to expect those standards outside in the world. So you create subliminally a central piece, plank of the educational jigsaw for us. The student unions and the students volunteering and so on creates an informal curriculum role, another crucial piece of the jigsaw, giving students experiences of doing sustainability. And of course our academic colleagues do another piece of the jigsaw in terms of the formal curriculum. But what we saw in this sort of institutional engagement in the city was something additional and we think special. We think we gave our students the opportunity to work out what it is to live sustainably in a city. What living in a city means. It's not just living in a place, it's about engaging and taking part in the change and the transformation of your place. And both institutions have committed to that as a fundamental part of what we're about, of our graduates leaving, understanding what it is to live more sustainably and understanding their role in changing places so they are more sustainable. And we'd like you to join us in thinking about what more you could do in your cities to make that difference.
Thank you, Chris. Could I just remind you that those resources about the Green Capital Year are in the guide, and particularly the citywide review that will tell you all of the things that our student bodies have become involved in. There's an awful lot about students in this citywide review. It's not all about students, but they are in there in many places. So, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you found this interesting. I hope you've been encouraged by the things that Bristol has tried to do and the successes that colleagues in front of you who have been able to achieve in the Green Capital Year. The motto going into 2016 was, it doesn't stop here. And as Chris has said, both institutions are committed to continuing this journey. We probably don't have a clue where the destination is, but we know it's a journey and we know there's more to do. And we want to share our experiences with you in whatever form you would find useful. You will find pinned up in the exhibition lots of information about the Green Capital Year as experienced by the University of the West of England. You can read that at your leisure. You can talk to people, though, in the various sessions that are available at the exhibition and find out really what it was like on the ground. And was it as wonderful as we were saying in this session? We thought it was, but others may have a slightly different view. We thought it was great. Why don't you try it?
C- Can I suggest that everybody who is from either UWE or University of Bristol stands up for a minute? That'll wake you up. Yeah. Okay. If you want to know anything more about what went on, just pick on one of those folk.
Do it nicely. Ian, over to you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Please join me in thanking the panel.